You're listening to WBH Radio. I'm your host, William Holly. Happy to be back with you guys for another episode. Last week, I posted a video to Facebook. A lot of people I love and respect chimed in. My brother, Jimmy Durden, who literally saved my life in Iraq. Cadell Stevens, two-time champion, about to be a daddy. Fernando Jordan, my co-cap, Mike E. Yo, I really appreciate it, man. Just trying to have a little fun, get better every week. A couple things I want to get into this episode. I got a guest coming in. Hopefully they make it to the studio. LeBron James has murals in LA that keep getting vandalized. But first, I wanted to set the record straight on Carmelo Anthony. It looks like Melo's going to be signing with the Rockets. And it's just frustrating to see such a talented player marginalized by media and essentially the league. There are general managers, you hear anonymous quotes, Melo's washed up, or he's not the same caliber player anymore. Man, I think that's completely false. And the narrative on Melo's been misguided for a long time. Man, let's go back to the beginning, man. The first time we saw Melo was at Syracuse. In his very first year, he led them to a national championship. A young man trying to figure himself out before you even know who he is, he's winning a national championship. And he did it for a school that had never won one. He didn't play for Mike Krzyzewski, who has multiple, or Roy Williams. No, he went to Syracuse under Jim Boeheim. Jim Boeheim ain't celebrated a championship before Melo, and he hasn't sniffed that game since he's been there. That's no small feat. That's not something to scoff at. You know, all these one-and-done talents that you telling me are amazing, that played with Calipari, John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, Eric Bledsoe, they couldn't get it done. Outside of Anthony Davis, the rest of them couldn't get it done. So please, that's not something to scoff at. Then we go into his career, right? We move into the pros. LeBron is the number one pick. Melo's number three. Now that rookie year, many people believe Melo had the better year. Although they gave the award to LeBron, Melo had the better year. Melo helped take a team that won 17 games the year before and boosted them up another 26 wins. Took them to the playoffs in the tightly contested West with Tim Duncan and Kobe Bryant. LeBron ain't go to the playoffs. He ain't go that first year. LeBron went 20-5 that year. Melo 21-6. That's impressive, man. He was over there balling, drug his team to the playoffs when LeBron couldn't. Okay. So those guys were neck and neck for a while. Then comes the year 2006. LeBron James, D-Wade, Chris Bosh, they signed three-year deals so they could have some more flexibility in their career. Melo took a five-year deal. Now, was that a mistake? I don't know. I call it a crossroad. He chose one path. He was in the Western Conference competing. Why should he be looking for greener pastures? That shows devotion. That shows loyalty. And you condemn him for that because he wasn't chasing the championship, because he wasn't conspiring? And also when they signed those deals, Carmelo said, hey, people from my neighborhood don't turn down $80 million. And he's right. LeBron James and those guys took less money. Now, today, LeBron James is hell-bent on taking the max. You know why? Because it sets a bad precedence when players take pay cuts. The Players Association goes to battle against the league so the players can get the most money. It's not ideal for them to take pay cuts. That was a bad precedent LeBron James set. And he'll tell you. So LeBron and them, they go on and they win championships. Melo was supposed to be that piece, that Chris Bosh piece of the big three. But he stayed in Denver. There's no shame in that. While he was in Denver, he was giving you 28 points and 7 rebounds. They never put a team around him. They never put a team in place that accentuated his talents. When LeBron's, when there was a deficiency around him, yo, we need a shooter. They went and got Ray Allen. There was no general manager pulling those strings for Carmelo. There was nobody helping him along. Okay, finally he gets Chauncey Billups over there in Denver. And right away, here they are in the Western Conference Finals. They lost to Kobe beating Bryant. No shame in that. They were the eventual champion. No shame in that. So we thought they were going to make a long run. The following year, here they are, Chauncey Billups, Melo. And then their coach gets cancer. Whether he's a good coach or not, teams are not prepared to lose their leader. So, here we are. Melo, LeBron James, they got their championships. All right, great. Melo goes to New York. Melo had the opportunity to let his contract expire and then go to New York as a free agent. Instead, he forced a trade, forcing the Knicks to really trade all of their assets, most of their roster, for Melo. Again, he wasn't taking a pay cut, and he shouldn't. No athlete should. So he gets to New York. There's no pieces around him. Y'all tell me the New York organization is one of the worst in sports. It's no fault of his that he wasn't able to produce a championship or long playoff runs. For 12 years, Melo gave you 28-7. Now let me ask you, as a general manager, as a president, isn't your duty to, okay, that player is giving me that? All right, let me find something to put around him. I always go back to the example of Allen Iverson. People thought Allen Iverson was a point guard. The Philadelphia 76ers said, uh-uh. Larry Brown and Pat Croce said he's not a point guard. So let's stop trying to put a square peg into a round hole. So you know what they did? They gave him the ball and said, AI, go score at a high clip. Go do what you do. And they put Eric Snow. They put Tyrone Hill. They put Dikembe Mutombo. They put talent around him that fit with his style of play. That's what good organizations do. One in which Melo never had. It's kind of like, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Right? Okay, you identify what he's giving you. Now put something around him. That didn't happen in New York. He didn't have the Pat Riley that LeBron had, or the David Griffin that LeBron had. Every time LeBron had a gap on his roster, they went and filled it. You guys want to discount Melo's gameplay. You want to discount the fact that Kobe Bryant said, yo, this is the toughest person I ever had to guard because of his size, his ability to score inside and out. He ain't said that about LeBron. Now, moving forward, Carmelo Anthony gets to Oklahoma. Now, his numbers took a hit, right? But I listen to guys like Colin Cowherd who say Russell Westbrook is a selfish player. In fact, he calls him Kanye Westbrook, which is actually kind of funny, man, because it's all about Russ. And we love Russ, but that's the truth. Sometimes he does stifle the talent around him. We've seen KD go other places and flourish. We've seen James Harden go other places and flourish. So, if you believe Russ Westbrook stifles his talent, then how can Carmelo's step back be his fault alone? You got to take in the Westbrook factor. You got to consider that. Right? The same happened to Paul George. You got to consider that. There was no plan with Melo and OKC. And they said, oh, he didn't want to take a bench role. Dog, if you come to me and you ask me to sacrifice something, you have to show me the payoff. Just asking him to go to the bench because that's what you think you're supposed to say? No. And Melo stood up. Yo, y'all didn't have a plan for me then. Y'all don't have a plan for me now. No, I'm not just coming off the bench just to say I did so. Right? People lose track of that. On one hand, they say, yo, Westbrook stifles talent, and then solely they blame it all on Melo. It seems when it comes to Melo, the media doesn't want to offer any context. Yet when LeBron James loses the championship, they give me 101 reasons why. Oh, he didn't have a team. He didn't have a coach. Oh, the other team. But when Melo falls short, he's washed up. It can't be both, man. It can't be both. They don't want to offer any nuance or any context. They only do that for their favorites. The way they cover Melo reminds me of another player who he wasn't on the in crowd, so the league and the media just threw their hands up at him. And that was Stephon Marbury. People want me to believe that Marbury ain't a ball player. That's false. I remember they asked Tony Parker one time, San Antonio Spurs champion guard Tony Parker. They were asking about all type of point guards, Chris Paul, Jason Kidd. He was like, yo, man, the toughest person I went up against was Marbury. strength, speed, ability to score, ability to pass. Right? Marbury, for a large part of his career, was 20-8. There's the list of players who have averaged 17 points and 7 assists for their career. That list is Magic Johnson, Oscar Robertson, LeBron James, Isaiah Thomas, Russell Westbrook, and Stephon Marbury. So like Marbury, if I was Melo, man, I'd take my ball and go to China. Get your money, be appreciated, become legend. Because if you're not one of the end guys in the league, they're not going to take care of you. And as we look forward to Houston, I don't like that situation for Melo. He's not joining a team that was one game away from the finals. No. They lost Trevor Ariza. They lost Mba Moute. You know, Trevor Ariza is somebody who might be a little bit more athletic, get up and down the court, who defends a little bit better. Him and Trevor Ariza are not the same player. So you ask him to slide in that position seamlessly. No, they're different guys. James Harden just come off an MVP year. Chances are he's not going to duplicate that. So if this thing doesn't work, I can see it's all going to come crashing down on Melo. But there are a lot of mitigating factors that are going to go into that. And lastly, he's joining a team that is coached by Mike D'Antoni. Somebody who admitted he quit the Knicks job because of Carmelo Anthony. Now tell me, does that sound like a situation where he's going to prosper? He's going to a coach who washed his hands with Melo years ago in New York. I don't like it, man. I don't like it, man. It's just frustrating to see such a talented player marginalized. They did it to Marbury. They tried to do it to AI. A lot of things go into winning championships. That's why you see all the jerry rigging that LeBron is doing, the maneuvering around, the pay cuts, the here and there, hijacking free agency. Yeah, it's great, but son, don't forget about those that have still put in work for 12, 15 years. Best of luck to Melo, man. Last week, I went to Los Angeles to visit with Fox Sports Radio. I want to thank them for having me out there. But as I'm walking into the studio, I'm asking myself, yo, Will, what exactly do you want? Because I don't want to be on the radio 5 days a week, 3 hours a day, especially at a time like this when there's nothing to talk about. I mean, our favorite shows are leading with social media spats between KD and CJ. That's not what I want to talk about all day. But I guess I'll chime in. If you didn't see, Kevin Durant was on CJ McCollum's podcast. Kevin Durant laughed at him when CJ talked about winning a championship. CJ didn't really seem to have a problem during the podcast. He just said, hey, man, it's unfair that you guys got all that talent, da 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 da. But when the podcast got out and everybody said, damn, son, you going to let KD laugh at you? Then CJ lashed out on Twitter and said, yeah, KD's move to go to Golden State was a punk move. He never said that to his face, but he said it on Twitter. And KD responded the way I would respond, like, yo, bro, I was just at your podcast. You could have said something. That's a snake move. Now, CJ fell victim to what a lot of people fall victim to. When KD said it to him in his face, he had no issue. But then he had a crowd around him. When the public got wind of it and started egging him on, like, yo, bro, you going to let him do that to you? CJ felt the need to respond. Totally weak move on CJ's part. The second part of that is, dog, it's okay for podcasters and guys in the barbershop to say, yo, KD, it was kind of weak of you to Golden State. But somebody that's competing against him, I don't want to hear you complain about that. Put on your big boy pants and figure it out. Kobe Bryant said when he went to see Michael Jordan and he was frustrated because the Boston Celtics had Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, KG, Mike said, figure it out. It's the same advice Kobe gave LeBron. Just figure it out. As competitors, I don't want to see you complaining about who you got to go up against. Okay? Now, to KD, people are bashing him because they say he's too thin-skinned. Listen, this time last year, he was responding from a unanimous burner Twitter account. Now he seems to mature. He's growing into his own, a young man feeling comfortable. He's responding from his own verified account. Kudos to him. If the worst part about that young man is he cares what people think about him and his game that he worked so hard to improve, I got no issue with it. Because when it comes to being on that court, that boy performs. That boy is performing and working hard. So leave him alone, man, if you want to respond on Twitter. Y'all keep poking fun at him, and he's just going to keep taking it out on LeBron James. Oh, listen to WBH Radio. I'm your host, William Holly. So LeBron James, we know he signed with the Los Angeles Lakers. Some Laker fans tried to pay homage to LeBron by painting a mural. The first mural said, King of L.A. They vandalized it. Then they painted another mural, and it said, it showed LeBron looking up at other Laker greats, Kobe, Magic, Shaq. They vandalized that one too. Now, when I first saw it, I said, oh, okay, I understand. And I thought everybody would have the same sentiments I did. But no. I saw people saying, yo, those are Kobe zealots who are jealous and they're scared LeBron James is going to diminish Kobe's legacy. I'm like, that's not what I thought. What I got was the LA fans were saying, Bron, we love you, but you got to show us something first. You're not allowed to float in here on cloud nine. You got to earn our love and respect, similar to the way Kobe did it, similar to the way Magic did it, right? Sports is meritocracy. It's based solely on your ability and your talents. It's not about who your mama is, who your daddy is, what school you went to, where you came from. No. LeBron, you got to come in here and show us, buddy. We know what you did at the last place. That's cool, but this is different. We watched Kobe come into this league at 17 years old. He was so young, his mom and dad had to sign his contract, had to co-sign his contract. True story. We watched Kobe struggle out the gate. If you remember in his rookie year in the playoffs, he shot 4 air balls against the Utah Jazz. They call it the air ball game. He was embarrassed. The media killed him. The papers killed him. Kobe had to work hard, entertaining those guys night after night, year after year. They watched him battle his co-star Shaquille O'Neal, public spats. We seen him go to trial for sexual assault. He would have a court case in Colorado, fly to LA that night, and arrive just before game time and suit up. It took all of that to earn LA's love and respect. No different with Magic Johnson, rookie year, winning the NBA championship. He shed his blood, sweat, and tears going up against Isaiah Thomas, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird. Had to announce to L.A. that he contracted HIV. Watched him go through that battle. Brought the L.A. Dodgers. It would be disrespectful to salute LeBron from the jump after we made Magic and all these other guys earn our respect. So I think the vandalism was just them saying, it's not anybody being threatened by LeBron. No, it's just saying, hey, bro, come show us first. I remember when I was in junior college, I played at Kingsborough. While I was there, me and my guys won 2 city championships. I was named the 2 tournament teams. I was named a conference all-star, and I was named most valuable player of the championship game. And when I moved on from Kingsborough to York College, everybody knew I was going to be a big part of what was going on. My coaches knew it. My soon-to-be teammates knew it. I knew it. You could say I was about to be big man on campus. But even with that, I made it my duty to come in there and work diligently to earn these guys' respect. To practice deference and show them, yo, I want to earn your trust first, your respect first. It's not about what I did at the last place. I'm not trying to come in here on that high horse. And I believe that's all the Laker fans are asking LeBron to do. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the way it should be. I was reading a book on the 92 Dream Team. Michael Jordan had just come off two championships. His Nike ads were taking off. He was king of the world. But Magic Johnson was reluctant to pass that league up. He said, nah, man, in practice every day they battled. If you want it, you got to come take it from me. We not just handing anything over. And Magic was right. That's the way it should be. But today's media coverage is just like, yo, if you go against LeBron, you a hater. No. There's nothing wrong with asking a young man to come into LA. Yeah, just show us first. The way it should be. What else we got going on? Speaking of artifacts and paying homage and respect, and statues and murals, I don't know if you saw that the Carolina Panthers were recently sold. Yes, they were sold. They were once owned by a man named Jerry Richardson. Now, Jerry Richardson got himself in some trouble. It recently came out late last year that he had to pay out some lawsuits to former employees for sexual misconduct, for using a racial slur. They said that it came out like on Fridays were jeans day at the Carolina Panthers facility. And to some of the female workers, he would make them turn around and, yo, let me see what you're working with. He would invite them to lunch, and everybody in the office knew they better not say no. And when the woman would get in the car, he would reach over and strap her seatbelt for her, you know, grazing up against her breast. Just some nasty stuff. So the NFL got wind of this, and they said, hey, man, you got to go. Similar to the Donald Sterling situation, but there's no audio, there's no footage, so they were kind of able to keep it on the hush. And if you know anything about these billionaire owners, man, they love the respect and prestige of owning sports franchises. These are like their Picassos. So for him to give it up lets you know that he was into some dirty stuff. And the league fined him $2.75 million. But while he was the owner, he erected a statue of himself surrounded by two Panthers. The statue sits at the stadium, I believe. So when the new owner took over, David Tepper, a reporter asked him, hey, what are you going to do about the statue of Mr. Jerry Richardson? His response was, yo, I'm contractually obligated to keep it. Yo, the nerve of Jerry Richardson for him to put that in the contract, right? But that's another story. But I thought to myself, wow, here it is documented that this guy is probably not of the greatest character. We have the sexual assault, the racial slur, yet he still keeps this statue. And I thought that, wow, this is happening in real time. You know, because many times we see people like Christopher Columbus. We celebrate his birthday. His name is all over the place. We celebrate him as a great man. But people who may have been around, historians say, hold up. He stole from the Native Americans. He robbed. He stole. The same with John F. Kennedy. We talk about, yo, he was great for the black community. I'm reading the book by comedian Dick Gregory. He said, bulls, Kennedy wasn't forced. Or you have people that say, yo, Lincoln freed the slaves. And others say, not really, man. He was just about the North, and he really wanted all black shit back to Africa. So we're seeing in real time, right, how there can be a discrepancy on an individual. Because deep down inside me, somebody, I want to believe that if we celebrate these guys' birthdays, they were good guys, right? I want to believe that. Even though I have historians saying the otherwise, I still want to be like, dang, man. I want to give our country a little bit more credit. They wouldn't put a statue of a guy who was a scumbag. But we're seeing it now in real time. It's documented. And the NFL and the Panthers can't do anything about that statue. So 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years from now, a little boy is going to walk in that stadium, see that statue, and say, man, Jerry Richardson must have been a good dude. Now, there may be somebody like me, an older guy, to say, yo, let me tell you the truth about Richardson. But over time, guys like me, guys that were close to the situation, us, who are seeing in the real time, we're going to die off. And the story's just going to be Richardson brought the Carolina Panthers to Carolina. Businessman, great dude. So I was just amazed, like, oh, that's how we get those Confederate statues. I'm seeing it happen in real time. I thought we needed to class this podcast up a little bit. Thought we needed a woman's touch. So I got a very special guest. This young lady was my arch nemesis in grad school. Nah, I'm joking. We had a lot of spirited conversation, good conversation. Smart, passionate, happy to have her here. She's done a lot of great things to include representing her country in basketball, the great country of Trinidad, my friend Jonae Billy. Billy, what up?
Thanks for having me.
How you doing?
I'm great.
It's been a long time. I miss you. When's the last time we saw each other?
Last class, whatever class that was.
December 2016.
Wow.
All right. So I mentioned that you play international basketball, sweet, sweet TNT. Mm-hmm. What are some other parts of your resume that you're proud of, man? What else you got over there?
What else do I have going on? Most recently, I played netball for Team USA.
Netball? That's basketball with no backboards.
It's the original women's basketball. Yes, it's the original women's basketball, and it's trying to come full circle, and we're bringing it back to the U.S. now. So right. We're trying to grow a team here, develop some talent here.
Excellent, excellent. I spoke with you last week. You said you were guest lecturing at Brooklyn College, Our old school. So tell me, what knowledge were you imparting on the students there at Brooklyn College?
Well, our professor, Neil Mavlone, hit me up, his global sports class. He's very familiar with my netball background, and so he wanted definitely to be able to share that with the students, the current students there. So okay. I basically gave a presentation on netball and, you know, just kind of give them the basic fundamentals of the game and so forth.
How did they respond?
I thought it went well.
It went well?
Yeah.
That's good. That's good.
I'm a great presenter.
Yo, speaking of that, I would have never gave you this credit in school, and I didn't. But you gave the most informative presentation in grad school. I don't know if you remember this, but you spoke about the value of sports for young women.
For women, yeah.
You talked about how girls who play sports are more likely to do better in business, less likely to be succumbed to sexual assault. What do you remember most about that presentation?
I know I was the feminist of the class. No, absolutely. Even now, just like I mentioned how I was a member of WISE, Women in Sports and Events, and meeting all these amazing business women, and one of the things that a lot of them have in common, they all played sports.
Right.
Or has some sort of background in sports, because the discipline that you learn as being an athlete and being a part of a team are attributes that you definitely need later on in the business world to be able to, you know, hang with the guys.
Yo, that presentation really got my attention. No lie. That day, I got on the phone. I called my brother-in-law. Yo, we got to get my nieces in something, bro. A soccer ball, a basketball, put a hockey stick in their hand, something.
Yes. I love it.
But no, definitely excited to have you here. Sometimes things come across the TV and I wonder, yo, what would Jonae think? So I'm happy to have you here. A few things I want to get into. Recently, WNBA player Asia Wilson, she responded to LeBron James signing a $154 million contract. She was just kind of poking fun, like, dang, man, us WNBA players, we struggling to just get $1 million.
Yeah.
You know, having fun. But in all seriousness, there have been a few athletes who have come out and echoed her sentiments. What do you make of that situation? How do we close that gender gap between what the males make and what the female athletes are making?
I mean, it's no secret about it, right? WNBA players, you're coming in and you're making, what, $50,000 a year. Even some of the league superstars, they're not making their money here. And a lot of these players, I want to say about 90% of the WNBA players, they play here, they play all year round.
Right.
They play here in the summer, they go overseas in the winter. That's an 8-month season in the winter. You leave there, you come right back here. If you're playing for a national team or something, there's no break. Right. That's a lot of strain on your bodies, right? And people are not understanding that. I get it. The viewership for the WNBA is a lot less than what the NBA gets, right? So if you don't have that viewership, you don't have that sponsorship, you don't have that type of money coming in, it's going to be less, there's less of a pool to pull from to be able to pay these players. I get it. But to question their skills or to say, well, if you had half their skills or, you know, then you'd be able to make more money. It's not right. You know, they're putting in the, I don't, have you been to the WNBA game?
I have not.
If you've gone, I used to go in the beginning, I've kind of backed off a lot in more recent years, but the talent level is crazy. The athleticism is crazy. I remember a center used to be 6'2". Right. Now a center is 6'8". and killing it. And we're not just talking, oh, back to the basket, post players. We're talking about I'm versatile enough to be playing on the wing and can actually drive and do all this kind of stuff. So the talent is there. We need to get the viewership up. We definitely need to really advocate for these women to make more money. It's not right.
I'm with you. And you brought up a point there. The athletes are spectacular. I don't mm-hmm. think anybody's questioning their skill. But I remember.
Have you gone to the comment session of some of these ESPN posts? Oh, they should be in the kitchen. Oh, they're making layups. And these are dudes that never even made a middle school team.
You're right. And those are a bunch of yahoos. I'm talking about the people that really understand. Like, I remember when I was a young guy, when I was an innocent young man, you know, I once mm-hmm. was, right? Believe it or not. And people would say things like, yo, we need to find a way to compensate our teachers, our emergency care workers, our nurses, because those are the true heroes. And then I got a little hip to this thing we call capitalism, and I realized, oh, the teachers can't be compensated the same way because nobody's spending the money to watch them teach a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
But they will spend that money to watch LeBron James run up and down the court in shorts and a tank top. So, yes, our athletes are great, but if they're not generating that money, you know, why should they make the same as their male counterparts? Where's the money going to come from?
I think that's something that we definitely need to figure out. I recently had an interview, and that's one of the questions that came up, because I spoke about, in my current position, being able to partner with organizations like NBA Cares. And the right. question that was presented was, well, what are some of the things that you would change about that? And I'm like, well, you know what? I think it's really out of my league.
Right.
It's not really something that I would have been able to change. But if I had the opportunity to do so, I would change the way we market the WNBA. Okay. Right. We had the president, who was the president at the, I think she was just coming in, Lisa Borders, and we had WNBA players present, and what they asked for were only young girls in the community.
Okay.
And I'm like, we continue to market to young girls. I get you. You want to increase your talent pool. You want to get girls playing, girls active. That's great. But then we fail to educate young boys about the talent that is the WNBA,
that
right?
is true.
And they turn into those men that later on are in the comment section talking about, oh, well, you know, like women's basketball sucks and this and that, the other. But I think we need to change how we market. We need to understand that there's a broader scope of, there's a broader demographic of people that would probably want to come out and enjoy games and thus increase your, you know, the money coming in, the stream of income coming in. But we haven't done that. And I think hopefully that'll be me, you know, be able to like,
right.
just hit that jackpot of like, this is how we need to market it better. This is how we need to get more, you know, fill our stands and so forth.
That is a great point, because you always think they market into little girls. Yo, you need to pull in those little boys too.
Yeah.
So they don't grow up to be, like you mentioned, those guys in the comment section saying they need to be cooking and,
right.
and cleaning. But this one last piece I want to ask you on this. You mentioned that these women play all year round.
Mm-hmm.
I like to believe that the solution for my issues are in the mirror. You know, I try to work hard to control my own destiny. Isn't it up to the women to really put the league on their back, maybe stop playing overseas and put all of their energy here in the States? I remember Deanna Taurasi, one of the best women out there,
mm-hmm.
she took a whole year off and went to play in Russia in the year 2015. Doesn't the talent, the stars, Deladon, mm-hmm. Maya Moore, Deanna Taurasi, isn't it their duty to really put their boots on the ground here in the States and do the best they can to grow the game?
I think they do an amazing job of growing the game and trying to sell their sport here. However, you mentioned capitalism, and that's what we thrive off of, right? If you're paying me 50 grand here and Russia is paying me $1 million just to sit, not even for the season of play, but they're paying you $1 million to sit down because I want you fresh for next season, what are you going to do? You got to feed your family. She's now married. She has a kid, right? She understands that she's in her 30s now and her career isn't going to last forever.
Right.
I need to stack some coins. And so her thing now is like, okay, you're going to pay me to rest my body and recover? Fine, I'm going to sit out. You got to do what you got to do. Because if you're not taking care of me, I got to find a way to take care of my family.
Absolutely, absolutely. I was reading up recently and the New York Liberty.
Yeah.
They moved the women from Madison Square
Horrible.
Garden to the Westchester Center.
Yeah.
But I think that was to cut down on some of the bills, some of the operating costs of playing in Madison Square Garden. So they moved it to a smaller venue. So hopefully more of that money can stay with the team and eventually make its way to the athletes. How'd you feel about that?
I personally haven't visited. But what I've heard is that the court, the atmosphere is not the same. You know what I mean? At Madison Square Garden, obviously, like, transportation to there is, like, everything, every train, everything goes right there. It's really accessible. I think that's a handicap moving out to Westchester because, you know, New Yorkers, a lot of us don't drive. We don't do anything. It's kind of like, you hear Westchester, you're like, oh, I got to go all the way upstate, mm-hmm. you know? I don't like the move personally. I think they've lost some of their audiences. Right. I think they've lost some of their interest, and they're a hell of a team.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes, man. Yeah. We'll see how it goes. Some other things I wanted to run through with you. The NFL. Now, I know when we were in school, Ray Rice was a big topic.
Yeah.
The NFL seems to have a domestic violence issue, and they tried to handle it. They've been suspending players. But they've been suspending players who haven't been convicted of a crime. You know, taking money out of their pocket. Ray Rice, Ezekiel Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
LeSean McCoy is in a similar situation right now. He was accused of some heinous acts. The NFL hasn't acted upon it yet. They haven't determined if they're going to suspend him. How do you feel? On one hand, we need to protect our women, do a better job of that. But on the other hand, shouldn't we also respect due process, man? What's your take?
Obviously, the feminist in me is like, yeah. Okay, we definitely have to protect our women, right?
Right.
I think we, as athletes, also need to make better decisions with the women that we choose
right.
to surround ourselves with. I think that the league, I don't agree with the way the league has handled a lot of their situations. And we're not just talking domestic violence, but I think they have an overall, how can I explain this? Okay. You have a situation where you want these men to be super masculine and super, like, you know, everything is aggression, aggression,
right.
aggression. But then it's like, okay, once you exit the field, it's like, just turn it off immediately. And that's really hard. And
right.
so maybe the league needs to do something, whether that's some sort of, like, sports therapy or something, on
right.
being able to better handle situations, right?
Right.
Maybe that's a way to really make that transition, to bridge that gap between the field and on-field activities and off-field activities. But we have even, I understand due process, but even athletes who have been accused and in court has been accused, I mean, they've been allowed back on the field. Other people haven't been allowed on the field, but we're not going to talk about that.
Right. No, we can talk about that. But specifically when it comes to the domestic violence,
yeah.
People have been in the court system and you said they've been let back on the field?
After, yeah.
Like who?
Huh.
Michael Vick, like with the dog fighting or...
I mean, Vic came back.
I don't think, look at the
penalties that he had to go through.
Right, but
for dogs
right, right.
versus people.
I don't think anybody's been convicted of domestic violence. I could be wrong.
I can't name drop. I'm not that familiar.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, I read stories, but I can't really quote.
Right. But I just find, I think it's a tough situation if you're in that room.
Yeah.
You know, You want to do the right by the women and show that you're standing behind them.
Mm-hmm.
But then also LeSean McCoy, there's been all types of stories that he wasn't around, he didn't do it, and now his career is in jeopardy.
Right.
You know, it's just a tough place to be, tough place all around. Now, you mentioned the anthem protest. I'm sure you were alluding to Mr. Colin Kaepernick.
Yes.
I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. It's been such a circus. Let's see if we could put a timeline together. Kaepernick protest. He took the knee. He wanted
right.
to raise awareness about social injustice.
Mm-hmm.
Bam. Then we move forward. His contract is up. He doesn't have a job. Other players are protesting. It seems that there was a players' coalition for him. Malcolm Jenkins and Eric Reed, they were working with the league. That seemed to be at a standstill. The league came out, and they said they're going to put rules in place. If you're on the field, you have to stand for the flag,
right.
or you can stay in the locker room. And then recently came out, that's on hold.
Right.
Right? So they're talking with the players about some other solutions.
Right.
So, Jonae Billy, what you got on all of that?
In that way, you forgot one other piece of the timeline with the owner of the Cowboys now being like, you know, regardless of what the NFL says, you know, like, I'm still going to penalize my players.
Right, right.
I think a lot of this is very, it's this good old boy, you know,
right.
like the good old boy network, stay in your place. This is not why I pay you. I pay you to do to run a football, to catch, to jump, and to do all these kind of things. And you have no other value here other than that. And obviously, I am a huge supporter of Colin Kaepernick. Right. I love the fact I am an advocate for any athlete that uses their platform for social good. LeBron, love him with his school and all that kind of stuff. But we're going to stick on the NFL.
Right.
Right? I feel like I do a lot of work in youth and community development. And, you know, we were talking about earlier about, you know, paying teachers more money. But I feel like athletes have a voice and a platform that they can really educate our youth and educate future generations in a way that teachers can't reach that kid.
Okay.
Because their sport and heroes hold that much weight
yes.
to them, right? And so you come to the league now, and we're watching black men, black women just being completely just executed in this country, and they're finally using their voice for it, and you're saying, I can't do that? Well, first of all, why are we even the national anthem being even played at a game?
Right.
If you know, if you read up on the history of that, it was the government actually pays the league to play play the anthem, and you know, and they turned it into this huge patriotic thing, and it has absolutely nothing to do with patriotism.
Okay.
You have former military people that are coming out and it's like, listen, I'm all in support of this.
Right.
You know, so I hate it. I love the fact that the league kind of rescinded on it, on the law that they, the rule that they recently passed or instated. I let them play. If not, otherwise, I feel like the players all need to get together and really kind of say, you know what, forget your league. You wanted the WNBA players to do that, right? To forget sitting out the season in Europe,
right?
And stay here and really build a brand here. Then let's let our NFL players do that. Show a sign of support.
I got you. Now, Joanae Belly. A lot of what we learned in school was from a business perspective also.
Right.
If you are the commissioner, Roger Goodell, if you're Jerry Jones, if you're any one of these owners, can you understand them being in the room and they're saying to the players, yo, your protests are jeopardizing the money, man. Our fan base, our TV sponsors, they're upset about this. It's not about what you believe or what you stand or yo, that's fine and well, but you're jeopardizing the money. Can you understand an owner trying to put an end to that? Yo, we trying to keep this afloat for all of us so we can all eat. Can you at least, can you understand that perspective? How do you feel about
that? I understand that perspective, but I also think this is also why diversity is so important in sports. When we talk about management, you're only getting that one-sided view from old white men. You have, you do not have the viewpoint of a younger generation. You do not have the viewpoint of someone from a more diverse background, right? I don't remember exactly how many sponsors were so angered by it, but at the same time, it's kind of like, totally just lost my train of thought.
No, that's fine. That's fine. No. But with the sponsors, there were players that lost sponsorship. Well, one was with USAA. That's a military company. So I don't blame them.
Right.
But we talk about diversity, and but the numbers show that the people that buy season tickets are majority of white. You know, these businesses owned by majority of white persons. So even if on Twitter the black community is outraged, that may not be enough to move the needle
because
for these
they're
NFL.
Not purchasing tickets.
Right, since they're not purchasing tickets and jerseys. So the owners have a responsibility to those folks.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier how, you know, they formed a coalition.
The table.
Sorry. You mentioned earlier how they formed the coalition, right?
The players formed the coalition.
Right.
Yes, I want to go ahead.
But then that's on standstill, which we kind of already knew was going to happen.
Why
it was
is
just
that on a standstill, Joan? From what I saw, Malcolm Jenkins, I'm glad because I didn't want to fit. Malcolm Jenkins, Eric Reed, they got a players' coalition. The players came together. They said, we're going to talk to the owners. We're going to get a resolution. Because Kaepernick, he raised awareness, what he wanted to do. And the owners, he said, he got the owners, right, in a position where they got to listen. Because you affecting the money, you got our attention. So the owners sit down with the players' coalition. What do you guys want? What do you guys want so you can stop protesting, stop jeopardizing the money? And the players' coalition went in all different directions. Malcolm Jenkins over here, Eric Reed is here, this, that. They were splintered. At that point, I had no problem with the owners. You got their attention. They came down to the negotiating table ready to give you what you want. But the players were fractured. They couldn't decide what they wanted. So in my eyes, the owner's off the hook at that position.
What was the resolution to that? The resolution was that they put money
about $90 million into certain charities to help with equality and raise awareness.
But see, once again, it's not really fresh in my mind right now. However, if my understanding serves correct, what we were raising awareness for was Black Lives Matter, essentially, right?
Police brutality.
But then the pocket that was created, that money, now encompassed a whole bunch of different things. So now that pot got split in a bunch of different directions. And we haven't heard anything that has really gone on with this. And I feel like that's something that always happens. It's like, okay, well, just, you know, like, look at a lot of these killings and all these kind of things. Okay, fine, we're wrong, we settle. Here's a couple of milli. Right? We have no problem paying out, you know? But then there's no real action. All we do is talk, or we're going to sit here and protest, and none of this is happening. There's a revolution. Something has to happen. Are we ready for it? I don't think so. You know, especially people, you know, I'm speaking real from a person of color standpoint. We're not really ready for what's going to come. But our protests aren't working. Mm-hmm. I still have no problem. You know, I feel like, what does the league need to do? I really don't know what they need to do. I have no problem with them kneeling. I don't see how that changes your bottom line. If your people are that angry about a national anthem, then come in after. Let the players stay in the locker room. You know, like something, you know? But I don't know what the solution is, honestly. And this is like so true right now. I don't know what the solution is, but something needs to happen.
And right there is why I think, you know, I'm willing to let Jerry Jones and the league off the hook. You know, I've been doing my little studying lately, trying to get understand of things that went on in history. And when I look at Martin Luther King's Montgomery bus boycott, he boycotted because they wouldn't let folks on the front of the bus. So,
but why did that work?
The financial impact, right?
But why? Why did they have a financial impact?
Because they came together.
We were united. We are not united. Hell, so you had, what's his name, recently came out and was like, oh, I will never use my platform. Shut
Dak
up.
Dak Prescott. So listen, Jonate, exactly. That's why I'm willing to let the owners off the hook, because the players are not united. The owners came and said, yo, here, we lay on the altar. What do you want? What do you want? You want money for your charities? You want money for your community? What do you want? That's why, you're absolutely right. That's why I'm willing to let them off the hook.
Because when they not completely true either. Go ahead. Because, okay, even if you have the owners come forth and say, hey, you know, like, what do you want? Clearly, you know, the owners, the Cowboys are sitting here like, nah, I'm telling you right now, if you sit here and do this, I am cutting you. Colin Kaepernick, the owners clearly came together.
The players couldn't even decide. They couldn't even negotiate Colin Kaepernick getting back in the league. They were fractured. They got exposed. The owners, the people you're protesting against. Listen, we are protesting people being killed in the street. Mm-hmm. Jerry Jones didn't kill anybody, right? So if I could get some money from him, if I could get some money from him and put it in causes over here, maybe use that money to fund lawyers for people that are wrongly incarcerated, or put that money in place to put politicians in place that are going to help us, that's a bonus. Mm-hmm. And the owners came, and I felt the players dropped the ball. We'll see, man. Like you said, but you mentioned it. It's gotta come from a place of unity, and I really thought the players got exposed in that regard. I got my friend Jonay Billy here joining me. Definitely a pleasure to have you here. I want to ask you about the MLB. They had three players over the last 3 weeks who got in some trouble for some old tweets that came about, right? I think in some instances, guys used the N-word. Guys made homophobic slurs. What should the MLB do with this? How should the public feel about these players being exposed? What's your take?
You mentioned earlier, the reality is, in a lot, we are we make up, 75% of all the athletes and all in sports, not baseball. Baseball, our numbers are a lot less.
Right.
But we are not in the ownership box, and we're definitely not in the stands.
Right.
Right? So at some point, I get it. You have to satisfy your fan base. The reality right now is politics have really infiltrated sports.
Right.
And LeBron actually said something, I don't know, either yesterday with the opening of school or today, where he said that, you know, like, Trump is using sports to divide, continue to further divide the country. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people feel emboldened, and they feel that they can say and do whatever they feel now because, you know, we're in charge and I'm going to tell you where you need to go.
Right.
And what do we do in turn? You know, we sit here and we protest and right. we start a hashtag such and such and hashtag Becky Barbecue or whatever, you know, like we do all this dumb stuff, but we're not really doing anything about it.
Right.
So at some point, the black community has to, you know, and the other communities band together for whatever they feel like injustice is being performed against them. Right. We got to band together and do something.
Now, should they be punished? From a league perspective, should they be punished?
If they weren't in the league, how do you control that? At the time. Were they in the league?
No, and that's another point I want to bring up. These when they were younger, 17, 18, should we be protecting our kids? Just at a certain point, should they get a pass for saying dumb things? I don't know about you, but I said a lot of dumb things when I was young.
You still do.
Yeah, I'm still kind of. But at least, like, is there some point we should protect our children? Should they get a pass? There should be a cutoff age. Like, how should we handle that? It's kind of weird.
That's a good point. It's really a good point. I think that's why we continue to educate kids right. on, like, hey, whatever you say now is going to come back to
more. Right.
You
there's know, it's come back real to consequences.
Yeah, because nothing gets deleted off the internet.
Right. And I said this on a previous episode.
Yeah.
In a country where we sentence juveniles to prison for life, like, there should be consistency.
Right.
If we're going to hold them to an adult standard at 16, 17. Then we should do it across all avenues.
But see, that's very consistent with what's happening. Which demographic gets sentenced to life?
Yeah,
it's the same demographic that gets punished in the leagues.
Right, I got you.
Versus everybody else getting off. So,
but what about if you're tweeting a rap lyric and it has the N-word?
See, I don't agree. Ooh, that's a whole nother topic, right? Because oh my God, I was reading something. He's an author. I can't think of names right now, right? And he was saying, because a lot of white people feel like, oh, well, it's a rap lyric and I can say it because it's in the song, right? And he was like, he gave an example. He was like, listen, my wife, when she's around her friends, you know, they call each other the B word.
Right.
He said, I don't feel the need to want to jump in and participate. Right? So if that's the case, why should you feel the need to come in? You don't have to be a part of everything. You can enjoy it. You know, they're censored music.
Right.
If you can make your kid listen to censored music, maybe you should listen to some censored music. You don't have to be, you don't need to be included in everything.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to give us our own space every once in a while. You know what I mean?
Yes, for sure. I like that. That makes a good point. Yeah, you definitely don't want to jump in and call your wife the B word. And, see a chick on the stream like, yo, B. That's a great point, man. We're going to get out of here soon, but one last piece I wanted to go over. When we were in graduate school,
yeah.
I caught Jonae reading a book, you know, being nosy, yo, what you reading? And it was a book called $40 Million Slaves by
love that book.
New York Times author Bill Roden.
Mm-hmm.
New York Times writer Bill Roden. I recently got my hands on it, and the author kind of wonders aloud, like, yo, how much progress have we really made from the days of slavery? Now, people might say, well, what you talk about? Athletes making millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
But the dynamic has not changed. It's still black labor and white ownership when mm-hmm. we talk about our coaches, managers, presidents, and owners. Right? And one story that really got my attention was his explanation of Jackie Robinson.
Right.
If you went to a school like I went to a school, Jackie Robinson was presented as somebody that broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball. He felt all type of backlash. He couldn't travel with his team. He couldn't eat with his team. They spat on him. But he paid those dues, and now all is right with the world. But Bill Roden said, yo, hold up. When they plucked Jackie Robinson from the Negro Leagues,
mm-hmm.
there were teams that were led by black coaches, black managers, black owners, black people capitalizing off the concessions,
mm-hmm.
black media. So how much progress, how much did that really help us? In fact, it helped to crush a lot of flourishing black businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jonae, as I look at the landscape today and I see people complaining about Jerry Jones or Kaepernick not having a job or with the WNBA players not having the compensation that they want, why do we still allow the same dynamic? Why don't we go back to the days of the Negro Leagues? Why don't we just take our ball and go home and start our own leagues.
We tried that.
When?
We tried, not necessarily with our own leagues, but we've tried to build our own flourishing communities. And what happened?
Jonay, I just seen
Wall Street. Okay. Look at, there. Whenever we have flourishing Black communities, systematically, there's always things in place to come and disrupt it.
Jonay, I gotta stop you there.
Go for it.
Every Friday night, I like to watch Ice Cube in the Big Three League, right? Mm-hmm. Ice Cube has created a league.
Yeah.
Even LaVar Ball has his little JBA league. I don't think there's anything in our path. LeBron James is opening schools.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just people get comfortable. People don't want to put the hard work in. Every offseason, we watch LeBron James go on vacation. He's on the banana boat. If he was creating his own league, there would be no time for that. He would have to be in the boardroom doing marketing or coming up with a plan.
He created his own school.
Right. So
doing all that.
I'm going to say, after I read that book,
yeah.
I can't feel sorry for any athlete in any regard, because you could create your own. If you're an NBA, if you're an NFL player and you don't have a guaranteed contract, yo, I sit back in amazement when you watch Jerry Jones like, yo, that's the boss. We better sit them straight. We don't have to. We let them parade around as if they're doing something we can't do.
But that's the thing. We're not unified. We are not unified.
So whose fault is that? Whose fault is that?
It's us.
It's us.
It's okay. Definitely us. But if you have generationally, you have just continuously been told, like, you know, to stay in your place. And you see it started with slavery, right? Where in order to get the rest of the slaves in order, they will take the strongest one and buck break it, right? And it's the same thing now. Colin Kaepernick stepped up and said, you know what, I want to lead this protest, and you know what, we're going to get you out of there. I bet you all the rest of them Negroes going to fall in line, right?
Right.
So there are things that they do to just continue. It's just like turning a switch.
Right.
You know what I mean? In the book, it also talked about, you know, like how we take the best talents, how you know, a lot of these big white schools, once they started pulling the talent from inner city neighborhoods, all of a sudden the HBCUs
started to falter.
They went right.
Right.
So if you're a bigger organized, more organized organization, meaning the larger colleges, the Dukes,
Kansas.
And you're able to fund money and all these other things that I want, and HBCU is not doing that for me,
right,
I am going to go. Right? And even if I'm that one stronghold that's like, you know what? Nah. I'm here to rebuild my community. I'm going to go back to the HBCU and I'm going to restart this process. The reality is there's somebody else in line that's like, nah, son, I'll take it.
Right.
Oh, he don't want that spot? I'll go. And so that lack of unity is why we can't do anything. I loved when LeVar Ball came out and was like, yo, I'm starting my own league. Because I am 100... Even though I was a collegiate athlete, I'm 100% against the NCAA.
Right.
You know, I feel like they take advantage of a lot of these athletes, and there are a lot of them, probably about 60% of them are Black kids.
Right.
Black kids that fall to the waist, you know, it's like, oh, come play ball for me. You know, and everybody, you know, and the non-athletes are sitting on the side like, whoa, you got a free tuition. Okay. And what? I got no education out of it. Because you control my schedule. You control every single bit of my time there. So there's a lot of things systematically in place. I'm not going to sit here and blame the white man for everything. I'm not that person. I definitely take accountability.
Right.
But there are a lot of things that are in place that stop us from unifying, that stop us from doing things. I love and I applaud LeBron. And I'm sure there are other athletes who don't get the same recognition for the things that they do as far as like rebuilding their communities. But we need to see and do a lot more of that. Didn't Grant Hill and a group of other investors, Black investors, try to purchase the what team was it? Clippers.
Grant Hill's a minority owner with the Atlanta Hawks.
Right, but we wanted to be a majority owner. A couple of athletes tried to get together, and what happened? Didn't the other owners say no?
I'm not exactly sure, but even with that, it's still buying into their league. That book just really changed my perspective. I cannot get mad at a Jerry Jones, a Roger Goodell anymore. You can take your ball and go home. Is it hard? Of course. We sit here in WBH radio because ESPN don't want to give me a job. Fox don't give me a job. We have to build. I remember last year, Kevin Plank, he is the CEO of Under Armour. He came out and he called Donald Trump an asset to the company.
Mm.
And Steph Curry, one of Under Armour's prize athletes, he came out, I was like, ho, 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 you know, called himself checking Kevin Plank.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, yo, you can't check that man. That's his company. If you're serious, don't take his $30 million a year. You go build your own sneaker. Imagine if LeBron James and Steph Curry had their own sneaker. LeBron had one model. Steph Curry had another. LaVar Ball has done it. And y'all tell me his son ain't a fraction of the player as those guys.
Stephen Marbury did it. And we all laughed about it. Oh, it's $15 sneakers. Them $15 sneakers. The same thing as them Nikes. I definitely had a pair of Starberries.
Starberries. Brooklyn's own. Brooklyn's own. So it's on us.
Yeah.
Yo.
We like the money, though. It's a capitalist society. We like the money.
And that's why it's on us. And that's my frustration is now turning to today's athlete. Because you've inherited so much. Muhammad Ali went 3 years of his prime without making a dime because he was protesting the Vietnam War. Kurt mm-hmm. Flood is the reason Major League Baseball players have free agency. They sacrificed so much. So you inherited this,
mm-hmm.
and you have done nothing to advance it to for the next generation. You're just capitalizing off somebody else's hard work. You're not making any sacrifices of your own. And when I hear them come across the screen belly aching about my contract ain't guaranteed, this, that, and the third, bro, y'all ain't put the work in.
I don't know if I 100% agree with that. There are parts of it that I definitely agree with. I like the turn in athletes now as far as, like, taking that control, reclaiming that control when it comes to their contracts. You know, like, teams have no qualms about trading you at the drop of a dime. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are now like, nah, I'm going to control my own destiny. I'm going to go wherever I feel like it. Fans don't like it. Y'all can suck it. You know, like, whatever.
But even with that, Kurt Flood, he was a Major League Baseball player. He mm-hmm. really advocated for free agency. Nowadays, these guys, you can't even get them to get involved in negotiation. That's what things really happen when the players' union goes up against the league itself,
mm-hmm.
right? I remember when I was in the Yankee locker room, I would bring something to a player, yo, you need to sign this, because before I could even finish explaining what it was, they already signed it, and they off. Yo, I'm going to the park. You got to get involved. This is what I'm saying. These guys kind of, to a degree, have been spoiled. You have to take onus in your own career every step of the way, fighting for guaranteed contracts for yourself. It's not saying something on Twitter. It's when you're at the negotiating table, be willing to pay the price, whether that's striking, whatever it takes.
Right. Well, let me ask this. How do you... Do you see a turn in that? I mean, considering, okay, once again, we're going to refer to the book that we read, right?
Right.
$40 Million Slaves. And, you know, they talked about, hey, from the time you're in high school, you're a high school freshman, and we pull you away from your family,
right,
and we start giving you supervisors,
right,
that don't necessarily always have your best interests at heart. They have the teams, the colleges, and all
those supervisors.
Meaning, like, you have, like, you pluck them away from the urban setting,
right,
and you put them in whatever community. And they have advisors. They have student,
right,
you know, school advisors. This person, everybody's always making decisions for them from
right.
the time they were 16, 17, right? So how do you now expect them to turn that switch when they've never had to do that before? And I think LeBron, once again, is a perfect example of that. From the time he came into, he didn't go to college, but
right.
the time he came into the league, he sent his friends. Oh, you're gonna go to school. You're gonna be my chef.
Yep.
I'm gonna fire this agent, right. and I'm gonna hire my friend as my agent. You know what I mean? So he's a perfect example of people who have never been exposed to that system.
Right.
As far that I call it the brainwashing system
right.
of everyone always constantly controlling you, and so now he's a free thinker. Because he now makes the decisions. He has people around him that aren't yes men,
right.
but that really has his best interests at heart. And I feel like if other players start to do this, then we'll start to see a turn of the tide. Is it going to happen? Is it going to happen in our... Maybe. Is it going to happen in our generation? Probably not.
You're right.
Sports ain't going nowhere.
It's
the economy about to tank, but is sports going to... You think sports is going to take a hit from it? No.
No. But it's on us, Billy. Yo, I told y'all she was the real deal. My friend Jonay Billy. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
That's a wrap. We out.